this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazgen. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own Epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step. Jesus is just
Hey, this is Father Vazgen, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 339 of The Next Step, a podcast that puts it all together, that connects the dots between the spiritual and the emotional and the physical, between the ancient and the contemporary. In fact, we're connecting the dots right now between today and Christmas and the New Year. Why not? It's about connecting. This is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission and brought to you by the cool folks at epostle.net. Hey, if you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. Well, how's it going? I hope you're having a good day today. It's been an interesting morning for me already. I don't know, sometimes just things flow, other times you make them flow, right? Whatever the case may be. I heard a lot of great stuff this week. A friend of mine, we were just talking, and you know what she said? She said in America, she's from Armenia, and she says in America you live to work. What? You live to work. And I thought about, well, the opposite of that is what? You work to live? Well, yeah, that's how it should be. That's how it should be. But somehow we get caught up in this whole thing about, well, what's the purpose of our life? Is it to work? Well, it certainly seems that way, doesn't it? Should be that you're living. The purpose of your life is life. But you're working to make that life work. Instead, sometimes we're living just to make that work. To make it work, right? Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there at you. There's so much going on. I attended an ecumenical service. The Pope was in Turkey. Well, I think today's going to take a little bit of a ecumenical tone to our next step. Let me start off by saying that the day, it was, I think, a couple days after Thanksgiving. It was very, very late night. Just kind of crashing out on the couch and saying, okay, got to get to bed. And all of a sudden, what comes on? You know, we're flipping through the channels. If you have that custom of going through the channels, you know, it's like, Sidney Poitier. Ah, there I go. See, I'm going all over the place. But it's worth it. When you get a chance to quote Sidney Poitier, you got to take advantage of it. I've always said that, you know, if there was ever, I mean, this is being presumptuous, if there was ever a time that somebody was going to make a movie about my life, I'd like Sidney Poitier to play me, you know? Like, you have a big congregation and Sidney Poitier walks in. Hi, I'm Father Vazgen. I think that would be like the coolest thing. It would be, what an honor that would be. Anyway, Sidney Poitier writes in his book, talking about watching, going through the channels. There's this little thing. Let me dig it up, right? Okay, here it is. It goes, this is out of his book. It's called The Measure of a Man. I read this several years ago, and I remember this opening statement. It says, it's late at night. As I lie in bed in the blue glow of the television set, I have the clicker in my hand, the remote control, and I go from 1 to 97, scrolling through the channels. I find nothing that warrants my attention, nothing that amuses me. So I scroll up again, channel by channel, from bottom to top. But already I've given it the honor of going from 1 to 97, and already I've found nothing. This vast, sophisticated technology and nothing. It's given me not one smidgen of pleasure. It's informed me of nothing beyond my own ignorance and my own frailties. Wow. And so there I was. It was like a night after Thanksgiving, and I'm going through, yes, playing with my dignity and my frailties, going through the channels and finding nothing until all of a sudden I see Pope Francis. I stop. He's sitting in an Orthodox church. Okay, so I turn up the volume, and guess what? Everything's in Spanish. The commentary is in Spanish. The narration is in Spanish. Well, it's an overdub. Because, well, we live in Southern California. About half of our channels over here, air channels, are in the Spanish language to accommodate the large Latino population that we have over here. Okay, so here I am watching television. It is Pope Francis of the Roman Catholic Church inside a Greek Orthodox church in, well, we figured it out because we saw His Holiness Bartholomew, the ecumenical patriarch there, he's celebrating the Mass, the Divine Liturgy, and it is being overdubbed in the Spanish language. Now, you talk about multi-ethnicity. Well, we in the church circles call this ecumenism, okay? This is a way of bringing everybody together, and that's what I want to share with you today. What's the value of this? Is there a value of this? Well, certainly that day, as I'm watching people nodding off, it looked like there were people nodding off. Of course, it was a new experience for them to be in this Orthodox church. I'm watching the expressions, and then all of a sudden, you notice that, well, there's maybe one or two, three women in that entire congregation, predominantly male congregation, predominantly, and beautiful music, beautiful liturgy, and the Pope sitting there, and you have to wonder, what's going on? Is this show? I mean, you have to admit that that is a valid question. And perhaps in that valid question needs to be answered. Yes, it is a show. In many ways, well, we all do our shows, right? We're standing up on stages. We're talking to people. This is a show. Church services are a show. It's a way of getting the message across. Okay, so let's not look down on that. Okay, there is an element of show in that, right? There has to be. Right, is just by virtue of it being broadcast in the manner that I described, you know, with a Spanish overdub. Well, I should say in that Latino congregation that is watching through television, got to remember that a large percentage of them are Roman Catholic. Okay, so you've got a show that's being produced for a Roman Catholic audience in the Spanish language, and there he is. There's Pope Francis, and there he is. The ecumenical patriarch, Bartholomew. Now, think about, and unfortunately, I have such limited skills in the Spanish language, I don't know if this was brought up, but I'm sure it must have been, that Pope Francis is the successor of Peter, the disciple of Christ, and the ecumenical patriarch, His Holiness Bartholomew, is the successor of Saint Andrew. And remember, who are those two? Well, read scripture and you find out that Saint Andrew was the first called disciple who scripture tells us went over to his brother. His brother was Peter, and he called him and said, "Let's follow the master. Here he is. Here's the master. I found him." And so Andrew and Peter in scripture are brothers. And so here it is 2,000 years later, Pope Francis and Patriarch Bartholomew coming together, celebrating a Mass, celebrating the Divine Liturgy, praying together, kneeling together. Did they commune together? Well, I didn't have the patience to get through it. I don't know if the patience was on my part or in just my heavy eyes. I told you, this is pretty late at night. But obviously, there are certain issues that go with taking communion. And the obvious part is where? It's not obvious to me. It's not obvious to you. It's obvious within church circles because there is a question of being in communion. Now, you say these people are sitting together. They're celebrating the divine liturgy. What's the purpose? Is it show? Well, isn't the purpose of divine liturgy to participate? To break the bread together? Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. Okay, I don't want to get judgmental now. But you got the idea of where I'm flowing with this, because I'm going to add some more to it now. Let me
fill in some of the logistical considerations. Pope Francis is in Turkey. This is in Istanbul, or what was once called Constantinople. And he's celebrating together because he is making his pontifical visit to the community there in Istanbul. There's all kinds of dynamics involved in that. Now, of course, what got my attention was, how does the Pope deal with a Greek Mass, a Greek Divine Liturgy? And interestingly enough, he was holding the book, the pew book. Yes, you know what I'm talking about. That little book that gives you the translation. So he was following along. And there was all kinds of people there. There was, in fact, an Armenian Vartabed, a priest of the Armenian church that I noticed. I don't know who else from the Armenian community was there. I know the acting patriarch Adishian was at the Pope's Mass. Now, this is not the Pope's Mass. This was the Divine Liturgy celebrated by His Holiness Bartholomew. Or it was at least in the Greek Orthodox Church. So anyway, a lot of dynamics there, a lot of logistical concerns, a lot of different things. And like I said, I wasn't getting the feed, the audio feed, to find out the narration, but knew enough about what was going on. But you got to ask yourself, what is the intention of this? What is the purpose of this? Well, how about fellowship? How about bringing together the two churches? How about the idea that here they have been alienated through the centuries for various political reasons, and today on the common ground of faith they come together, and at least, at the very least, they are praying together, right? That's beautiful. That's beautiful and worth commenting about. Now, some of the other things that happened. Well, after that, a couple days later, I went to an ecumenical service that was held at the Western Diocese. And here our Archbishop had designated, and this is his fifth year that he's been doing this ecumenical service. He brings in people from different denominations, including Armenian Catholics and Armenian Protestants, evangelicals. And together we had a prayer service recognizing the services of, get this, the Seventh-day Adventist Hospital. And I have to tell you, I was more than impressed, because the elder from the Seventh-day Adventist group got up and he explained that, well, first of all, let me back up a little bit. Here in Glendale, the main hospital in town is the Adventist Hospital. It is a huge, huge operation over here. Just a beautiful facility, and just about anybody who has gotten sick has gone through this particular hospital. Huge staff, takes up acreages here, and it's an impressive hospital, okay, to say the least. And I've got to tell you, as the Armenian pastor here in Glendale, I take my kids there once a year, and they do the Christmas caroling bit right at that hospital. Okay, so now the Archbishop had an ecumenical service where we all prayed together, and the focus of it was the work that the Seventh-day Adventist Church had done through their hospital. And I was very impressed when the elder got up and he spoke. And he talked about the history of the Adventists. He said it was only 120, 130, 140 years ago. It wasn't that long ago that the Adventists got started. And it was a group of men and women, I guess. Let's call them the faithful, a group of faithful people. Seventh-day Adventists. And you know, these are the people that the seventh day, they honor the Sabbath. That's a very important in their articulation of the faith. They have a commitment to body, soul, and mind. And a group of them got together and said, we need to make a hospital. And they set their sights on a small little hotel. Now, he said that, I believe he said 20, 30 years after the denomination had started. And here's an interesting thing that he said. He said a group of them got together. They found a hotel in Glendale, California, for $26,000. He says it was an old Victorian building, $26,000 at the time. And he said that this group got together and prayed because they couldn't afford $26,000. This is like 1900s, 1890s, 1900s. They couldn't afford $26,000. And here's the prayer that they offered. They prayed to God, and they said that if we can get this building for $15,000, then that will be a signal from God that this is a venture that we should pursue. Interesting, huh? They didn't pray that the price would go down. They said that if the price does go down, it must be a signal. And not only a signal, but a signal from above, from the main man, right? Okay. It's a signal from God. It's a beautiful prayer. I was impressed by this. And anyway, he went on to say that, sure enough, when they made the agreement, the hotel was owned by Mr. Brand. And that will only make sense to anybody who is familiar with Glendale, because the main street in Glendale, the main business district, is on Brand Boulevard, named after this man. So anyway, Mr. Brand sold it to them. He went up to them after hearing their story and their faith. He set the price at $12,500 for this hotel, which later was sold and later was rebuilt and later was renovated and today stands as the Glendale Adventist Hospital, where, like I said, thousands of patients are treated throughout the year. It is just quality, quality service. And I was very impressed that the Archbishop would single out a hospital like this, because it's important in our lives. I'm not a real fan of ecumenical movements because there's issues of faith. But what I am a fan of is this idea of fellowship, of coming together and looking and saying, here's something that needs to be applauded. Because in that applause, what happens is that people find inspiration. And we are all in need of that inspiration. So I'm throwing out these stories of ecumenical, in other words, churches coming together, throwing these two stories out there for your review, for your perusal. Is that the word? For you to think about, for you to contemplate about what is it all about when you get together. We're going to share some more about this in a few minutes. I'm going to take a break right now for the song of the day. This is a song called Autumn Night. I thought we'd take advantage of still being in autumn, although it's getting a little bit cold for me. But winter's a few weeks away, so let's listen to this song called Ashnan Kisher. And this is from Gomidas. It is off of an album called 10 Revelations, kind of an interesting compilation and presentation of Gomidas' work. I will definitely put a link on today's show notes. Giving you a little warning, as the music goes on about halfway through, it does get a little bit quiet. It's not like I'm ignoring you. I'll never do that. It's part of the song, and you'll see why, okay? Enjoy. Ashnan Kisher Gomidas Vartamet.
Zolitotin al shabavet Tavel bohoti Zahir homer amen Homer tachun darin yerkenov Heru heru hakelo Yeran yeran tarchelo Thank you. routine alla Jean-Marvin. Dove la routine?
Ashun Kisher, Gome Das Vartabed, The Fall Night. Hope you enjoyed it. There's a little bit of thunder and a little bit of small little birdie noises, right? I like that. It's just a beautiful way of ending that. Hope you enjoyed it. There was a link on today's show notes, so you can check out this incredible album. It's a really a nicely packaged, nicely done album. I encourage you to check out not only this song, but all of the songs that we play and encourage them. Encourage the artists, encourage the musicians by picking up one, especially right now, right? We're getting close to the Christmas season. Courtesy of Jethro Tull. You may want to check out the Jethro Tull Christmas album. It is highly recommended by your host. I tell you, it is one of my favorites for this Christmas season. And as we're getting ready for the Christmas season, of course, we're thinking about all kinds of things about giving and sharing with one another. I want to share with you a story that comes to us from the Gospels. And it is one that you've heard, but I want to take a twist to it, okay? I want to make a twist to it and present it to you in a different format, okay? It is the story of the Good Samaritan. I know you've heard this, and it is usually Sunday school fare, but let's take a different approach to it, okay? Of course, it is the story of the man who is beaten and taken by robbers on the way from Jericho to Jerusalem. Or it could be vice versa. Actually, it could be from anywhere you want. It could be the local highway. Just imagine for a moment if you saw this person on the road, beaten, taken for all he was worth, and he is left for dead on the road. That's what Jesus instructs us with, this parable. This parable of human compassion, this parable of loving your neighbor. And Jesus tells us that on the same road, there were three men that also passed by this man who was taken for dead, okay? Now, the first one was a priest. And the priest went by. Now, you got to remember, the priest is a relatively a good guy. Present company accepted, of course, as I tell this story. But you got to remember that the priest basically has a stature in the community, and he is somebody who knows his scriptures, he knows the faith, he knows what it's all about, right? He is in communion with God, and he looks at this man and has compassion, but he walks away. And the second one was a Levite. Now, a Levite is somebody who knows the laws, knows scripture. He's another person who is relatively well-liked within the establishment. And the third person was a Samaritan. Now, the Samaritan, you've got to remember that Jesus uses this
this model of the Samaritan because he's a disliked person. He's looked down upon. In fact, people looked down their noses at the Samaritans. They didn't care for the Samaritans at the time. So if we were to look at this parable in another format, let's say, we might say that here is a man who is going down the road, and let's I'm going to get a little personal, okay? Talk about the Armenians and their long-going feud with the Turks, okay? So you might say that this Armenian guy was going by and he was taken by a band of robbers and they left him for dead. And approaching him is a priest from the Armenian church, yes. And he probably stood there and looked at him, made the cross over him, and maybe even offered a prayer, but he walked away. And the second one was probably a man, we could make him comparable to somebody from the main philanthropic organizations, you know, of the Armenian people, whether it's the ARS or the AGBU or whatever it may be. I'm telling you, I'm getting personal. And I know we have some non-Armenian listeners out there. You can describe it to anything you want, right? It was somebody who was well-respected within the community who looked upon this man and said, oh, this is too bad that you're in this situation. Now, the Samaritan, since we have a little hard time in understanding why Jesus picked the Samaritan character we can ascribe to, well, let's call it a Turk. Somebody from Turkish background, okay? And I'm saying this because this is exactly in the spirit with which Jesus said this parable. He wanted to show that the outcast within that community, the Samaritan, the Turk within the Armenian community, the macho man within the feminist community, the Democrat within the Republican community, or the Republican among the Democrat community. Let me show no partiality, okay? Or let's say today, the Islamic terrorist within the world community, okay? He picked on the person that was outcast, and he made that person the hero of the story. And so it is the Samaritan, or let's say in our case, the Turk, okay, or the Islamic terrorist who happens to be walking by at that moment and sees this man, and he has compassion, and immediately tends to his broken condition. He tends to his wounds. He bandages up his wounds. He puts him into his car, into his cart, and he takes him away. He puts him up overnight at a local shelter, at a local hotel. He takes him to a hospital and tends to him, says, please take care of him. And the hospital says, wait a minute, we need insurance from this man. And the man says, no problem. Here is my credit card. Take my credit card. Put it on my account. I'm paying for this. And then Jesus turns to the people and he says, of these three men, the priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan, which was a brother to this man? Which one acted as a neighbor to this man? And so in the story we read that the answer comes to Jesus, the man who is asking Jesus, who is my neighbor, is now answering, the one who took care of the man. He's the neighbor. He's the one who was the true neighbor. And Jesus says, go and do likewise. Now, I'm presenting this story because you need to understand when Jesus was talking to the people, he wasn't giving them comfortable answers. These are uncomfortable things. He picks the people that would make them the most uncomfortable, and certainly a Samaritan would make them very uncomfortable that he turns out to be the hero. For the Armenians, certainly a Turk becoming the hero makes Armenians uncomfortable, and vice versa. We got to say, if the story was told in Turkey, the hero would definitely be an Armenian. Then look, who is the person who is a neighbor to this man? And no credentials are offered beyond the compassion that he offers. There's no other credentials. Doesn't matter he was a priest, he was a Levite, doesn't matter whether he understood law, scriptures, or anything. It's the compassion at that point. Now, I said I would take a spin. Now, I hope you love that spin, okay? Because that's an important... It's not a spin, actually. It's the intention with which Jesus told this story. And I am convinced that if he came today and he told this story, he wouldn't use a Samaritan as the hero of the story, because obviously nobody knows who a Samaritan is today. But he would use the person that is most unlikely to become the hero, the person who is looked down upon within a unique community, that would be the hero. Now, I told you I would take a different spin to it, and that wasn't it. What I want us to do now is to focus in on the man who was injured, the man who was left for dead. See, we always talk about the Good Samaritan, and remember, when we talk about this parable, we talk about it as Good Samaritan parable, as if Jesus said, okay, now let me tell you the story of the Good Samaritan. No, Jesus told the story. We are the ones who then put a title upon it and call it the story of the Good Samaritan, because obviously the story is telling us something about what we need to do, where our compassion level is. So I'm going to ask you right now to really focus in on the person who was injured, the person who was left for dead. Okay, what happened to him as a result of these workings? What happens to him? Could you say he was transformed? Can you say that he had a new understanding of his enemy, of the person that he looked down upon? If he was an Armenian man who was standing there, left for dead by the robbers, would you imagine that at that point he would have a different understanding of the Turk who came up and helped him? Certainly he would. He would understand that that man acted out of compassion, not out of his prejudices, but out of his compassion. And he would have a new understanding of compassion. He would be transformed. And that's what I'm asking you to look at today. Not the story of the Good Samaritan, but of the man who was left for dead. Okay, we'll call it a new parable, the man who was left for dead. That's the parable of the man who was left for dead, because he too was transformed. Obviously, he was taken care of, his physical being, his wounds were taken care of. He got some rest. He was put up in a hospital, in a hotel, whatever it may be. That's the physical part. But what happened to him emotionally? What happened to him spiritually? Can you say that there was a transformation there? Obviously there was. Because he was enveloped in love. He was offered love without condition. An unconditional love. The Samaritan, whoever he may be, came up to him and didn't put any conditions on it. He didn't say, what's your insurance policy like? Where can I take you? He said, no, you are hurting right now. Let me take you. Let me pick up your pieces. Let me go and tend to you. Can you afford this? Are you going to pay me back? What's in your pocket? Do you have a knife in your pocket? You may come out. I'm your enemy. You may come out and hit me. No, no conditions. He says, let me take care of you. Unconditional. And so now this man who was left for dead has changed. He becomes a new person. Now I want you to think about that for a moment, because this is where I want to go, especially this Christmas season. We always talk about giving, giving, giving. Well, you know that giving is an action for us. It cleanses us. It allows us to understand ourselves within the context of the world. We need to become the Good Samaritans. We need to become the good people that are doing the compassionate work out there. But don't forget that it has an impact on people, and it changes people. Remember one of the laws of thermodynamics. To every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. Well, why don't you think that there's an opposite and equal reaction to the goodness that you do? You change people. People change when you surround them with love, when you offer that love. Jesus talks about this neighbor, this loving your neighbor, and he gives this example of the Good Samaritan, talking about what our obligation and responsibility are to one another. He also gives this this story, because he's about transition, about transformation, about transforming the hardened hearts of people so that we can soften up to one another. Now, you talk about on a personal level, okay, I could understand, but imagine if we do this on a big level, in our communities, within our small little groups, our church groups, people who oppose us, to surround them with love. How about within our community? How about in the world? How about answering evil with goodness? Can we do it? Because certainly that man who was left for dead had only offered that Samaritan evil. He was prejudiced against him. He didn't care for him. He looked down at him. He didn't care for this man. And yet this was the man who showed him compassion. What do you think happened to that man now? He's changed. He has a new outlook. He understands his brother, his neighbor. And imagine if we can do this on a larger scale. If we broke down some of those boundaries, those prejudices that we have, and understand that we're all in this boat that we call Earth together. And our only hope for survival as a species is our ability to work together, to offer our friendship, to offer our love to one another. And we see that Jesus' message is so simple, so profound, and it is worthy of our attention, not at only a personal level, but at a global level. I'm convinced that this is the secret. Unconditional love is our opportunity to share with one another the love that God has placed in our heart. God creates. We read in scripture, right? It says God creates this universe in 6 days, right? And then he says he creates man in his own image. Well, what does that mean? That you have that ability to create that world within 6 days. We want to do it in 6 days. It takes us a lot longer, doesn't it? The world that we need to create is a world that is loving and sharing and caring. And these are not just words that we throw out there, but these are words that have to have meaning in our lives. In a few weeks, we're going to be singing Christmas carols, Peace on Earth, Goodwill to Men, the scriptural passage that comes to us from the shepherds that tell us that the heralding of the good news. Well, what does that mean? Is it just a Christmas card quote? Is it just something that we put on an ornament on our Christmas tree? Or does it have a real meaning? That's the challenge for the Christian today. That's the challenge that Armadoxy has always had. That's the challenge that Armadoxy has addressed and has offered its prayer and its action towards. This is why it irritates me to no end when people ignore the message of Christ and focus more on the logistics. What is his name? What kind of star was it? Where is that star? Where is Bethlehem? Can we find? Who cares? Christ is not of Bethlehem. Christ is not of Jerusalem. Christ is of this world, is of this universe. And where his name is, where he is born, becomes the new Bethlehem, becomes the new place for all of life to succeed. I leave you with this message today. As we get closer to the Christmas feast, I want to share with you some of the more profound articles of faith, so that when Christmas comes, it's not just about decorating a tree and putting up some lights, so that we understand that that light is the light of the world that comes into our lives, so that we understand that that inn is not just some building that didn't have a room for Mary and Joseph, but it is our hearts, it is our souls that need to be cleared out so that there is room. So we don't have to say, sorry, Jesus, there's no room for you in my life, but you can take a back seat over there. No, he wants to come into our lives. And there is your opportunity. I take a break right now. Be back in a few minutes.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that message. As nice as it is a reminder that these podcasts are made possible through your kind prayers and donations. Every bit goes a long way to getting this message out, and we hope you find value in this message. We certainly have a fun time doing it, but the seriousness of it is so, so pressing right now. When you realize that in this world that we have an opportunity to make a change based on the solid values that we've learned. And these solid values are not just accepting a name, but of actually taking an action towards life, taking an action of compassion. And that compassion involves sacrifice and then synthesizing it all, putting it all together, connecting the dots. That's what it's about. Now, your donations can be done anyway, as Susie said. The easiest way is to go on our website and click on the donate button. I am pleased to tell you that in the very, very near future, it's taken us a little longer than we expected, but we are having a new website. Hopefully next week I'll be able to tell you, open the new website, okay? But until such time, all the usual ways are there. And you can also send in a check, too. The address is St. Peter Armenian Church, 632 West Stocker Street in Glendale, California, 91202, the USA. Yeah, I like saying that. Hey, listen, I am going to head out to a party tomorrow night. It is our St. Peter Armenian Church's annual party, Christmas party. It's a day of celebration for us over here. Throughout the year, as you know, we do so much outreach that it's an opportunity for us to get together and really celebrate the blessings that we have. And I hope that wherever you are in the next few weeks, you will be celebrating this very special season. It is a beautiful season filled with magic, filled with miracles. And I know those miracles do happen. Like the Good Samaritan story that turned out to be a story about the parable of the broken man today. Okay, he was broken, but he was healed. He was made complete because he understood the power of love, because the power of love touched him. So too, celebrate that power of love, that power of Jesus Christ in your life. We are at the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to invite you to our website, epostle.net. Very easy to remember, apostle with an E, because it's for an electronic and expanding universe. And I also want to steer you to our Facebook pages. All of us have Facebook pages, and there is an apostle page, there is an In Issues page. Just join us, okay? Join the conversation. Put your comments. Love to hear from you all the time. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed and been blessed by this edition of The Next Step with Father Vazgen. We invite you to join us every week for our regular broadcast. This, as well as all other episodes of The Next Step, are available for streaming and download at epostle.net. In addition, you can stream, download, or subscribe at Apple's iTunes Store, Blueberry, and Stitcher Radio, or try our smartphone app. New episodes are available globally every Thursday. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. We invite you to point your web browser to epostle.net, where you can enter your email address to have the next step delivered directly to your inbox. For the production crew and all the members of In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
No brag, just fact.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cat out! Off, but on top, limits!